a lot of hating going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
All right, hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Sunday, August 14th, 2011. We are here to talk a little bit about the first week of Florida football. I have four people who have performed extremely well to this point in fall practice and are looking to get better each and every day.
We're having the best offseason of our lives right now.
We'll start with Tyler Jett.
Hey, what's up? We are recording this on a Saturday night in the Alligator Sports Podcast Nook. So this is how dedicated we are to you. We're going 110%. It's fall camp. Two days.
We got Tom Green.
How's it going, everybody? Good to be back again, I guess.
Oh, he's so shy.
Yeah.
And we have our producer this evening, Matt Watts.
It mean grind.
Taking over the nation. Hashtag that on Twitter, everybody. For this show, we're going to talk a little bit about our observations from the first week of fall practice. We're going to get a little bit into the conference realignment, a lot of stuff on that. Texas A&M is coming over to the SEC. Going to talk about where the conference is going from here, maybe what the end game could be, some other teams they could look at. Then we're going to transition over to some fall practice notes, the A.C. Leonard injury. He'll be out for 6 to 8 weeks. And we're going to talk a little bit about position battles at cornerback, Sam linebacker, and wide receiver. And then we're going to have a little bit of fun with the Trey Burton stuff. And as always, we'll wrap up the show with our newly minted Ahmad Black Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Will Hill Awful Life Decisions of the Week. As always, send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. We haven't gotten anything yet, so we're going to assume that means we're doing an excellent job and there are no complaints. But if that's the case, you should shout us out anyway, because we'd always appreciate the extra affirmation. All right, so getting started here, we're going to start with the most breaking news, which is that Texas A&M is reportedly moving to the SEC, hopefully effective 2012. There's a couple things that have to happen to make that a reality, but we'll assume that it is going to go through because all the sources say it, so it must be true. We'll throw it over to Tyler. He's got a little bit of background information for us.
Yeah, we're recording this on a Saturday night. The rumor is it's going to happen at any minute now. The announcement's going to happen. I think it's probably going to take a couple more days. I think ESPN isn't necessarily reporting this as accurately as they would lead you to believe. But surprise. Give you some background info on this. This kind of started as kind of message board fodder. Say earlier in the week, A&M rumored to go to the SEC, which A&M was also rumored to be involved in the SEC this time last summer, when you know the whole world got realigned. Or later in the week, there's kind of a leak on A&M's rivals affiliate website. Basically, the headline was like "Goodbye Big 12" or "Hello SEC," something along those headlines. I can't remember exactly what it was, but anyway. The Texas A&M Board of Regents are scheduled to meet on Monday and discuss authorization for president to take all actions relating to Texas A&M University's athletic conference alignment. That was originally scheduled to take place on August 22nd, and they moved it up 1 week. Obviously, in light of all the rumors that are going around, they decided we got to kind of discuss this earlier. A Higher Education Committee of Texas, that's a state thing. The Texas House of Representatives are scheduled to meet on Tuesday and discuss matters pertaining to higher education, including college athletics. The University of Texas athletic director has been quoted as saying it looks like A&M's leaving. The University of Kansas athletic director has been quoted as saying it looks like A&M's leaving. So, I mean, pretty much all signs point to Texas A&M leaving. Now, the bigger question, I guess, is what schools do follow Texas A&M, or where else does SEC head in this expansion? Because you got to figure that long term they're not going to sit at 13. It's going to be an even number. Right now it probably would be 14, and then maybe a year or two later it'd be 16. I mean, that's what everything seems to be heading. I think the Pac-12 is eventually going to expand to 16. That seems to be the idea of where everything's going to head long term. So what do you guys think as far as the SEC's next moves?
I mean, first of all, Texas A&M has to figure out a way to get out of the contract they signed with the Big 12 last year, and the SEC has said that they don't want to be the catalyst of the agent for that, you know, contract split. So, I mean, I think that's just a hiccup in the plan. They'll figure it out. Yeah, they'll figure it out. But as far as, you know, all the other teams that have been thrown around, Florida State, Clemson, Missouri, Georgia Tech, I mean, the only one that makes any bit of sense is Missouri to me, because I don't see any of the presence of Georgia, South Carolina, or Florida allowing a Florida State, a Clemson, or a Georgia Tech into the SEC.
Right, and that's one thing I think that Mike Slive has been quoted as saying, is he wants to be kind of a unified conference.
Right, that's how Slide does things. He doesn't.
Right. You know. So when they do this, it's going to be voting, and it doesn't necessarily have to be unanimous from what I've heard, but it's like 11 out of the 12 ADs are going to have to approve of it. So Florida, I think South Carolina and Georgia kind of create like a pact that if any schools from their states also get up for a vote, they won't vote for those schools. So like Georgia Tech, Florida State, and Clemson are like pretty much automatically out, despite right. what ESPN's reporting.
Maybe I'm being really stupid about this, but why would they not want
basically,
any other?
Well, basically, like Florida kind of has like the monopoly on SEC coverage in North Florida. Georgia's got the monopoly on SEC coverage in Georgia, and so forth. They don't want in-state competition as far as like TV deals and things of that nature.
That doesn't exist anyway. Just even though they're because the team's there anyway, that kind of stuff isn't a problem. Just
well, because it's an SEC contract.
It's more SEC money.
Oh, like the SEC TV network and stuff like that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Now I got you.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, I think Joe Shad, surprise, surprise, might have this wrong in reporting that Florida State and Clemson are expected to be considered heavily. Another thing is, I don't think SEC is not necessarily reaching out to people. It's the other way around. A&M is reaching out to SEC, and that's how this whole thing got started. Right, Mike Slive has been quoted in the past as saying that we operate like ducks. We're working really hard under the surface, but you can't tell what we're doing at the surface. Everything looks calm, and we're going nuts underneath. And I think that's kind of what's going on right now. So you don't really know what's shaking out, but a lot of things are shaking out.
And there was also the report that came out recently from the Big Ten and the Pac-12's meeting out west, saying that they were in favor of a +1 format for a playoff, and that would set in motion the 16-team four super conference format that everybody thinks is going to happen. So in my opinion, I think A&M is just trying to get out ahead of the curve here and reaching out to the SEC, realizing that they made a mistake last year and not pursuing it more heavily, and now trying to get into the SEC to get ahead of the curve and get their foot in the door in what's going to be the most powerful of those four super conferences.
I think it's interesting that you brought up the playoff thing that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have talked about. I kind of want to get onto that later. But one thing that I think is important to think about is just the fact that last year, where did this leak come from about the Florida State, and where did this leak come from about Clemson, all of that ESPN's reporting. There are some rumors that maybe some people that are trying to undermine Texas A&M's chance of getting in might be reporting that. And then the thinking is, like, if we can get them to report that maybe the SEC is considering Florida State, maybe the SEC is considering Clemson, then all of a sudden South Carolina, Florida, some of these other ADs would be like, oh, I don't know if I'm really comfortable with voting for Texas A&M, if that means that Florida State all of a sudden is going to be getting in as well. And so that's sort of to shake it up. I think that's all it is just smoke and mirrors, and ESPN's kind of going along with it. Remember, ESPN also got duped big time, the Big 12 stuff. Last year, Joe Shad got duped. And the thinking is that some people inside of Texas were leaking stuff to Joe Shad, so Joe Shad would report the Big 12 was falling apart, when in fact Texas kind of wanted to stay in the Big 12, and by reporting that the Big 12 was falling apart, it would urge the other teams of the Big 12, the Missouris, the Kansases, they'd be like, well, we got to keep this thing together, and then be more willing to bargain with Texas and to give Texas what they wanted, which is essentially this huge contract, and that's the reason that now Texas A&M is trying to get out. That's the reason that the Big 12 is going to fall apart, essentially, is the fact that the University of Texas can kind of do whatever they want with it. So there are rumors that possibly some people from Texas could be leaking stuff to Joe Shad that they're hearing that Florida State and Clemson are considered.
I mean, I could never see Joe Shad being used as a pawn in such a way. Never. So, I mean, I just can't see that happening.
Yeah.
In case you can't tell, that was sarcasm, listeners.
Yeah. Before we get too far down on a tangent with the playoffs and the national implications, just a little reaction to the actual Texas A&M move. Do you think that would be a good move for them, a good move for the SEC? Are they a good fit in this conference? Any thoughts on that from anybody? Tom, you can start off. You haven't said anything yet.
I think in terms of having a Texas market in the SEC, it's great for the SEC. But in terms of it actually being Texas A&M...
What?
What's your problem with Texas A&M?
For those that are listening that can't tell Tom's mannerisms, he decided to shrug at the thought of Texas A&M.
Which seems kind of silly to me. I mean, Texas A&M.
I mean, they're not awful, but they're not great.
Look at their fan support. Look at how many people they get there every time.
They're a consistent top 10 finisher in the Director's Cup, which means their all-around athletics are great. They're not just good in one sport like a lot of the teams in the SEC. They're all around, and they have strong academics as well. They would be another Vandy, another Florida in the conference. They would boost up the SEC's academic rating. It's something that the SEC would no doubt be in favor of, in my opinion. I mean, I don't see how Texas A&M is like
something to scoff at.
Yeah, it's like not to scoff at all. I mean, it's the second biggest university in the state of Texas.
I know, it's
the
a great biggest market.
State in the state it's in the
great,
United
I
States.
I said it's a great so, market. So I mean, for I don't know what to add.
For those that are
getting into Texas, that's if you wanted a great market
for the fans that wanted to hear what a TKO sounds like on a podcast, Matt Walsh just delivered one.
Yeah, right now going into this season, Texas A&M is a top 10 team. They'd probably be third or fourth best in the SEC this year. So definitely, it would be a quality. Add for them, is it a smart move to go to the SEC? Is there a reason that they have to make this jump, in anybody's opinion?
Well, I think long term the Big 12 is gonna fold. I mean, that's not stable ground when you have one school controlling the entire conference. Like, I'm sure Texas A&M doesn't like it, as most schools in the Big 12 probably don't like the fact that Texas is getting catered to, and they know that that's essentially not a conference that's built to last, and they got to get out of there. SEC is a stable conference. You go in the SEC, you're gonna be in a conference going forward, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Okay. So then you said the SEC hasn't reached out to teams. It's mostly been teams coming to them. If you're stuck at 13 and the Big 12 is a conference that could potentially fold, do we see the SEC reaching out to some of those teams, especially given the fact that they don't want to add another in-state team?
It's kind of interesting. I don't really know what the SEC is going
to
do.
It's tough to speculate.
Right. It's tough to speculate. Another thing is that you don't want to rush into anything. Like, you know, everything's going to change and the landscapes are going to keep changing rapidly, probably for the next two to three years, I would expect. Like, I don't think all of this is going to happen overnight. But I've obviously, people have been throwing Missouri around. People have been throwing, actually, Texas Tech around. That's the one thing that's interesting, is that they don't want to go expand into the same state twice or whatever. But I think Texas is the one exception. Like, they wouldn't mind going into Texas Tech, I've heard. And you'd have two in Texas, which I guess is okay. One thing is that people have thrown around Oklahoma, but apparently that won't work because Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are a package deal, and they're not interested. Oklahoma's a small state, a small market. They're not interested in getting two schools in such a small market.
Right. I was going to say the same thing. I think Texas will stay with Oklahoma. Like you said, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are a package deal. I don't see Texas going anywhere or Oklahoma going anywhere without each other. I mean, that's just – if one of those two leave the Big 12, then it's automatic, you know, crumble of the conference without a doubt. So I think those two are going to follow each other. I think the SEC optimally would like to have – Texas, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and, you know, maybe a fourth like Missouri, but that's, you know, not anywhere near a goal that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, I just to reiterate, I don't think there's any chance to get Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I don't think so either, but right. I mean, I think that's their optimal goal. If they could choose any of the schools out there, I think that's what they would choose.
Right. You know? Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage is a great person to read for any SEC-related stuff. He has some really good insight, and I guess he's been working the phones. Apparently, he's in Vegas on vacation with his wife for his anniversary. This whole thing's broken, so he's not too happy, but he's apparently been working the phones. And I guess his thoughts are Virginia Tech would be an option. Also, that they would really want to get a team from North Carolina. However, Duke, UNC, Wake, and North Carolina State seem to be a package deal because they're all great elite basketball schools. The one that they might be able to get would be NC State, and so there's some rumors that might go after NC State. I think of those, they would really like to get Duke just from an academic perspective, because as someone said, it'd be like a Vanderbilt, a second Vanderbilt, essentially, what you have. It's a really, really strong academic conference, but I think that's just out of play. ACC basketball is too strong. And after that, I think he said Texas Tech and then Missouri would be the next most likely to happen. Now, again, that's really difficult to happen. I think long-term, SC will expand to 16 teams. I think A&M is like a shoe-in to happen in the next couple of days, but they could sit at 13 and just wait it out for a while and figure out what they want to do next and not rushing into anything.
When you say a while, how long do you think they would be willing to stay at 13?
I don't know.
It's rough, if you want to ever find like a playoff system or the way that, if you want to have even, because they're doing the two-division thing. So then it's like, to have a different amount of teams in each one, it doesn't seem great to me.
It's not a great system. I think it's not that big of a deal, though. I mean, Major League Baseball has two different amount of teams in the American League and the National League. Like, you can survive with 7-1 and 6-0.
I don't think that if they brought A&M in that they would go into the 2012 season with 13 teams.
Why not?
I mean, that's just an opinion. I mean, it doesn't make, you know, mathematical sense. Like you're saying, I understand what you're saying about MLB, but it just doesn't make sense.
Right. I mean, I guess they wouldn't want to force a school that they don't really want into the picture just for the sake of having 14 teams, but if they can find somebody that they're happy with and that wants to make the move, I don't think they would wait on it unless they... I mean,
yeah,
if it was
no, I think that's correct. I agree with you in that, like, I mean, what do I know? I don't really know, but I would just expect them to go to 14. But at the same time, I wouldn't expect them to rush into it. Like, it makes sense to me that they would start next season with 14, but I don't think they would do it because they only have 13. You know what I mean? Like, the mathematical situation wouldn't be what would force their hand.
When we talk about the 14th team, a lot you kind of mentioned a lot of schools that are academic that they want to add to the conference. Is that something that's a focus, is trying to improve the academics conference-wide, something they've been working towards recently?
I think that's, I mean, that's always ideally a situation is you want to get a school in there with a good academic reputation.
Especially with the recent reports of the APR requirements for BCS, you know, qualification now, you're going to have strong athletics, I mean, strong academics to even get there.
Does anybody really understand academic progress reports?
No.
I have no idea.
I can go over and say no.
I know that.
Didn't we get those every 4.5 weeks in middle school?
Yeah, that's the last time I have had any kind of progress.
Is that? Got your joke. Didn't love it, to be honest with you. I mean, basically, what the numbers being thrown around is like it has to be your APR or whatever has to be at 130.
930.
930. Okay, whatever. Yeah. Apparently, like all but like five teams that qualified for bowls this year had an APR above 930 already.
But Florida in 2006,
06 or 07,
2006 national championship season, their APR was 913, so they would not qualify.
But what was the qualifying at that time? It doesn't matter. Yeah, the bottom line is, like, no matter what it needs to be, it'll be that. They'll figure something out.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't even think that's going to matter. But I do, I mean, I think that they want to have a reputation of having good academics.
Right.
I
mean,
it's not a bad thing.
It just seemed weird to me, the idea of, like, Duke football trying to live in the SEC. Just because, like, and they could be an ad from an academic standpoint, and basketball would obviously be fine, but just the idea of the Duke football team trying to compete in the SEC was just a little funny to me. So it just seemed like an odd pick, but
for me, I think a team like Virginia Tech makes more sense in that regard because, you know, they don't have a strong – I mean, they're strong in athletics and other athletics besides football, but they're not dominant like they are in football. Right. I mean, the only thing that worries me there is would they want to leave the big fish in a little pond scenario to be – a smaller fish in a big pond.
Is that Virginia Tech?
Yeah.
If I'm one of the big ACC teams, I don't want to leave the ACC because I'm beating up on the Wake Forests and the North Carolinas of the world.
Right. I think we could sit here all day and speculate on which teams could move and what's going to happen. But just to kind of wrap this up, let's say 5 years down the road, we'll go around the circle. How many teams do you think are in the SEC and which are the new ones that are not involved right now?
All right, 5 years down the road when I'm getting my master's in journalism at the University of Florida, still doing this podcast, still going strong, I am going to expect, like I said earlier, Virginia Tech, Texas Tech, and Missouri will all be added, and it will also be there, and that'll put them at 16.
All right. I like 16 as well, but I don't like Missouri. I think Virginia Tech and maybe NC State.
You bite your tongue.
Just because you're trying to get the Blaine Gabbert locks in effect doesn't mean you can continue to rep your Missouri. Just let it ride. Let it ride.
Yeah, I'm with the 16. Tyler's got me convinced on the need to go out of state, and so I think it will be the Missouri and the Virginia Tech and Texas A&M. And
I'll also go with 16, Texas A&M, Missouri, Virginia Tech, and a wild card for you, West Virginia.
Huh. All right. Very, very interesting.
Strong academic institution in West Virginia.
Well, moving away from the teams who may or may not be into the SEC and going to one who for sure is, let's talk a little Florida football.
We're
1 week into fall practice. We can go over some of the things we learned. We're going to get into some position battles. But first, I think the biggest piece of news so far is that freshman tight end A.C. Leonard tore his meniscus last Saturday. And it was a non-contact drill. He had surgery. Going to be out 6 to 8 weeks while he recovers, and he could end up taking a medical redshirt. Just a little background, a four-star prospect. He was the number 5 tight end, according to Rivals. Led the team with 3 catches and 18 yards in the spring game, which I know everybody was pumped up about. And so let's talk about a little bit of, we'll start with Tyler, just your reaction to this news and where you think they go from here at tight end.
I guess my reaction is that sucks for A.C. Leonard. I don't know if I like had a crazy reaction one way or the other to the injury news. I mean, that's going to happen. One of your quote-unquote potential contributors will go down in fall camp. It's going to happen. I think they've got Jordan Reed starting at tight end. I think this is good news for Gerald Christian. All of a sudden, he's probably going to see a lot more playing time at tight end because they're going to run 2 tight end sets, which obviously, like, losing your backup tight end is way more important in this offense than it would have been last year in the spread where they use 1 at a time, if that. I don't know. That was basically my reaction, I guess.
But wouldn't you say that Leonard was probably more in line to play behind Reed as where if they're going to run two tight end sets, you're going to have either Reed and Christian or Leonard and Christian in the game because Christian is more of a dominant run blocker?
I mean, that's an interesting take on it for sure. I always figured it would be... Yep. I just thought Reed and Christian were the top two and that they would be playing together the majority of the time. I don't know... I guess if they want to have more of a blocking presence, that would be... Muschamp said that they're moving Clay Burton over there. I don't know a lot about Clay Burton, but as a linebacker, I imagine he's more of the blocking type of tight end. And they said Omarius Hines would take some reps at tight end like he did last season, so that's more of a receiver-style tight end there. So I guess they have some options still, but it definitely wasn't... It's not great losing one of your guys like that. But.
Yeah, I think it's a not a huge loss, but I expected him to, you know, see the field a fair amount when they were going into two tight end sets.
Now, I didn't see a lot of it. Oh, go ahead, Watson.
I was going to say, I mean, it's right now they're still in camp.
Yeah.
Assuming he doesn't get medically redshirted 6 to 8 weeks, he'll be back after the Tennessee game, presumably.
He's still on the team.
You know, yeah, right. He's still on the team.
Right, that was the next thing I wanted to move into. I didn't see this stuff on Twitter, so one of you is going to have to break it down for me, but apparently there's some allusions that he might not be here.
Well, Mr. Cool Breeze Swag, which is his... Twitter handle if you're looking to research this for yourself. After the news broke on Wednesday that Muschamp told the media that he was out for 6 to 8 weeks with the meniscus tear, some tweets appeared on his timeline. One was, "I guess I'm Gator bait now."
Another one saying, "Guess I should do what I should have done 8 months ago and make AC happy."
That's the most damning one to me, yeah. I guess.
8 months ago was January.
if you're Gator Bay, that means you're not a Gator, is basically what people are reading into that as
meaning. That's a pretty damning one, in my opinion.
And let's not forget that during the recruiting process, he did decommit from Florida for like a week before he recommitted.
And did he decommit and then it was open, or did he decommit and commit somewhere else?
It was open, but I know he did take a visit to Alabama at some point, and that was the other big school on his list.
Looking at his ESPN recruiting profile, he also apparently considered Nebraska, Alabama, like Tom said, Miami, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And what's also been common with a lot of the Florida people who get in trouble is the schools like UCF or USF or something local that they just shift down to, and that's been very common. Does anybody have a bold prediction on what happens with AC Leonard here?
I don't know, but I mean, one thing I got to say is stop being like a punk. Like, you sign with a school, just stay with that school, because I feel like the worst thing for you to do is to usually transfer. That sits you back at least another year just from sitting out, also adjusting to life on a new school, which they keep talking about, like how tough it is when you're a freshman adjusting to college life. You're only delaying that process,
right? You're choosing to do it again.
Yeah, and it's like it's gonna hold you back. Like, once you pick a school, just to quote the Florida Gators, go hard at that school, you know what I mean? Like, right. I just don't understand anybody that transfers once they get here, unless they realize like there's no chance they're gonna play. Like, they get out there like, wow, I'm not nearly athletic enough to compete with these guys, or if they're like homesick or whatever. But even homesick is like, get over it. Like, a lot of freshmen are homesick, football or otherwise.
And with him, he's from Jacksonville. Homesickness shouldn't be an issue. He enrolled early, so I mean, he's had plenty of time to adjust. Why transfer now?
Right. One of the things Muschamp said was that, given the nature of the injury, he can still be around the team and he can still go to all the meetings and keep up with things and learn all the plays and make the adjustment to the new system. Maybe it'll be difficult because he's not doing it on the field, but at least, you know, terminology-wise and mentally, he should be where he would be if he wasn't hurt. I don't know.
Right. The only thing I can think of is that he just doesn't like Muschamp. Like, he was an urban guy when he signed. But just get over that as well, because if you're a football player, especially a college football player, you're probably not going to like your coach. Like, they can say all they want about coaches being good guys or whatever, like that those are like people that really look out for you. But when you're a college football player, you're an 18-year-old kid getting coached by a 40, 45-year-old guy whose job is to make sure that you're prepared and whose livelihood is based on the fact that you win on the field, they're not going to be your best friends.
Right. I feel like if you're happy at Florida and then you get hurt, you'll stick around. But if you get hurt and you're thinking about leaving, you probably weren't that happy here in the first place. That's what I would take from this. I don't think is the soul. Now he's like going from extremely pleased to be here to all of a sudden he gets hurt and now he's trying to be out.
Something. I mean, when you have an injury like that, I'm sure lots of thoughts go through your head, especially for a guy that probably figured to see the field a fair amount this year. I mean, he probably starts doubting himself, and I could understand him like considering that, but keep it to yourself. Don't put it on Twitter and then delete it an hour later.
Right.
Also, like, transferring's not going to solve that anyway.
Yeah.
Like, if you're sad because you got hurt, like, I'm sad for you, man. I know that sucks to get hurt, but that's not, like, transferring's not going to be your solution here.
All right, so they've created a little bit of uncertainty at tight end. We're going to move into some of the other positions where we're not exactly sure what to expect on opening day. The most interesting one to me is cornerback among the position battles. Last year, obviously, it was held down by Janoris Jenkins and Jeremy Brown. What we've heard so far this year is a lot of Cody Riggs. He's a guy that Dunbar and Hammond both called the guy they least like to go against. And then a little bit about Jeremy Brown stepping up and becoming a leader. And then Moses Jenkins is still very much in the rotation. If anybody wants to give their take on the position, let's start with Tom this time.
I think when we talked to Muschamp on Wednesday, every combination that he threw out there that they've been using at first-team cornerback, Jeremy Brown was in every single one of those. He was like Jeremy and Moses, Jeremy and Cody. He said Pop Saunders was seeing some time out there with the first team. Yeah, I think Jeremy Brown's locked in one of those spots. The other one's going to be up for battle. I could see Cody Riggs taking it, but again, we're not there to see practices. We're only going off what we hear from these guys.
I think Cody Riggs is going to be starting at one of those cornerback spots. One thing you did say, Greg, I'm going to correct you, that you said that Janoris and Jeremy Brown held down the cornerback spots, and it was Janoris in like a rotating door of starting cornerbacks.
And
next
Jeremy Brown wasn't holding down much when he was on the field.
And also Jeremy, like, I think he got hurt for a little bit. Did he get hurt for a little bit?
He was hurt his first 2 years here.
Well, I know that.
And then he had 10 starts last year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, he missed three games there.
Holding it down compared to the rest of the bumps. Yeah.
Well, like, even then when he was in for 10 starts, like, he got benched, like, pretty quickly. And then the Georgia game, he got torched and got benched real quickly in that
10 starts doesn't mean he played 70 snaps in that game, you know, just so he started the game.
Just looking at his numbers, I saw he had three interceptions and then 5 pass breakups. But I saw, like, with Janoris on the other side, he obviously got targeted a lot whenever he was in there. And I don't think that always went very well for him. So I'm with you guys on the Jeremy Brown's not exactly the answer train.
Yeah, I still think I could see Jeremy starting, if that makes sense. I can't see Moses Jenkins starting. He was terrible last year. Just go pop in the Florida State tape if you have a chance,
right,
and just watch. Christian Ponder basically just targeted Moses Jenkins the entire game, and that poor kid had no chance.
Yeah, Jeremy Brown's like run-of-the-mill bad, but Moses Jenkins is just like laugh-out-loud awful. Like,
I didn't laugh out loud, but
there were
bad
times
it was,
where
it
I was
made
close
me sad for him, actually.
And I still stand by my assertion that Marcus Roberson will see plenty of time at corner this year.
I could actually see Cody Riggs and Marcus Roberson at some point taking over. Roberson will obviously be the Muschamp guy from day one. That's a guy who played defensive back in college. In case you haven't read every single story about Muschamp ever written in the last, like, ever.
Right.
And I think Cody Riggs, everyone seems really high on Cody Riggs. Frankie Hammond basically said, if the one guy he hated going against the most was Cody Riggs, Quentin Dunbar also was really high on Cody, and he looked good when he was on the field last year. I didn't notice him being bad, which is something to be said for the Florida Demons
and
backs last year.
And that was as a true freshman. So I mean, right now all we can go on is basically what the players and coaches are telling us. So I mean, I really don't think that there's anybody that's locked into a starting role at corner at all.
Actually, right? Can I correct myself real quick? I just kind of dissed the whole Florida defensive backs last year, when in fact they were very good. I think they were ninth in the nation. Overall, the defense was like ninth in the nation.
Top 10, top 10.
And that was all on the strength of their pass defense.
Definitely.
They had no pass rush.
Right, they had a ton of picks.
Nope. 79th in the nation in pass and sacks with 21. It was the worst showing since 2002. So I mean, they definitely
were like 83 or something like that.
It's been a long time.
Bad.
Yeah, their front seven wasn't great, but they still had one of the best teams in the nation. A lot of that had to do with Ahmad Black, and a lot of that had to do with Janoris Jenkins, who are both gone. So of the group that's left, I'm not high on anyone.
Right.
So I guess that's what I meant when I kind of dissed the Florida defensive backs. Yeah, sorry, Janoris. Sorry, Ahmad.
But I feel like there's not a spot. You know, any of these freshmen that are getting mentioned can come in and play on opening day, in my opinion.
Yeah, Muschamp seems high on Jeremy Brown. All the wide receivers seem high on Cody Riggs. Everybody in general seems to be praising Marcus Roberson. Even Brantley yesterday, who said, you know, aside from saying everybody was having a great offseason, you know,
he singled out
that freshman number 5, who,
wow,
Marcus Roberson.
That new freshman, number 5.
Yeah. And the last freshman corner to wear number 5, Joe Hayden.
Now,
so
when we talked to a couple of the players a few days ago, Cody Riggs said himself that Jeremy Brown's been taking on a leadership role among those at the position. I could see him definitely taking a lot of snaps this year. And then Riggs, we talked about how he's praised by Dunbar and Hammond. A lot of what they had to say was just that he's just a pest to go against, was the word Dunbar used, I think it was, just because he's a strong, like, press coverage corner. He'll get in your face. He won't let you off the line. He'll disrupt a lot of your routes that way. So I guess a lot to like about Cody Riggs. The biggest thing that I felt like people held against him was his height. I think he was listed at 5'9", and I don't know if anybody else was thinking about this, but when we talked to him the other day, I'm supposedly 5'10", and I felt like I was, like, looking up at Cody Riggs a little bit. Like,
you think
I
don't he's taller than 5'10"?
I don't think he's 5'9".
How tall do you think he is?
Maybe 5'10", 5'11".
Okay. So like, why would they list him shorter, though? That doesn't make any sense. They never
well,
do
I mean, did they do they recheck between seasons? Is there an official height measurement at some point? I don't know.
I think every year they're measuring the height, and, like, a lot of times they'll kind of botch the numbers to make them look better. But I don't know. Maybe they did it the opposite way. Maybe
it's
they wanted people to read scouting
when these players go to the combine for them to measure, you know, an inch and you know some pounds lighter or heavier than what they're listed at in college.
Right. But I'm
sure.
saying, like, I don't know. He's listed at 5'9" still, and I thought he seemed taller than that. But I mean, I guess that's just me.
Maybe he's wearing shocks or something, and they measured him flat.
Well, maybe Muschamp's going for an edge here and going the opposite direction. I mean, and actually making them look smaller on the actual listing.
Saying. Billy Donovan notoriously lists his tall players taller and his short players shorter. That's just, I guess that's Muschamp's doing the same thing then.
I like the strategy. Yeah. I like the hustle, Will.
Yeah.
Slick Willie.
But I mean, just the reason it came up to me was because when people try to have a knock on Cody Riggs, it's his height. And I mean, if you're 5'11", Darrell Revis is 5'11". He does all right for himself. Yeah. So
he's tight.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's going to be an issue with Cody. I mean, the one big thing is when Muschamp came here, the MO was that he loves really tall cornerbacks. But at the same time, it's like, if you're tall corner, like, Moses Jenkins is taller, but he's not good. So why not go with the shorter guy who seems to be good?
Yeah. What's Roberson listed at?
I don't know. I can check that. The last note I have on the position is that when we talk about Moses, he missed 7 games last season when he hyperextended the elbow. And he said when he came back that he was a little bit rusty, and that might have contributed to his struggle somewhat. So I don't know how much anybody's buying into that, but if you really want to see the bright side for Moses Jenkins, that could be it. And Roberson's listed at 6'0".
He's a bigger guy.
All right, well then moving on from there, we're going to talk a little bit about the Sam linebacker, another position that was wide open so far. He's going to be the guy next to Bostic and Jenkins. It might be a revolving door, but who do we think is the front runner right now?
It seems to me the name everybody's been throwing out is Lorente McCray. I mean, he's been a guy that's been around for a while and hasn't really done much. It seems like it's kind of his time to step up and step into that role, but there's no proof that he can do it. So, I don't know. I think that spot's kind of wide open as well.
Well, there's no proof that anyone can really do it on the team. No one has any starts out of any of the linebackers
right.
other than Jenkins and Bostic. But yeah, it seemed like people were really high on McCray the most, so I think that would be my early favorite, I guess.
A little bit of backstory on Lorente McCray. A guy that was a defensive end here the last couple of years. He switched in fall 2009, but before that he played linebacker here and he played linebacker in high school. So I guess if he's making a switch back, if they're going to run the hybrid 4-3-3-4, it'd be nice to have an outside linebacker with a little bit of a pass rushing background, so maybe he's a good fit from that perspective.
Right, I can see him more as an outside linebacker in the 3-4 than maybe the 4-3. I don't see him as much in a pass coverage role, but I mean that's not the strong side's role anyway. But you know, when you're in the 3-4, you're going to need that defensive end type outside linebacker that can put, you know, step in, put his hand on the ground if he wants to, or step back and rush. So I mean, it fits there for me.
Right. Some of the other names that have been floating around, Darren Kitchens, Dee Finley, Graham Stewart, Michael Taylor, guys like that who haven't shown a lot, and I don't think any of us would venture to speculate on them. We haven't seen very many things, but a lot of unknowns that could potentially end up taking that spot.
Only thing I can say for Michael Taylor is there's a video on YouTube of him and Mack Brown driving around the University of Florida campus, and they're like pulling down their window and driving by real quick by people who are walking or riding their bikes and just screaming at them. So I like the intensity that Michael Taylor could bring to the Sam linebacker position.
Well,
that's all I can say, though.
I mean, does that mean, who else was in it?
Mack Brown. But Mack Brown was just driving. Like, he wasn't really contributing. He was more of the getaway guy.
Yeah, and this is a natural segue into our wide receiver segment.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Muschamp. So far, Muschamp has called Frankie Hammond his most consistent receiver in terms of all the areas of the game, the route running, the blocking, the actually catching the ball, making plays in the open field, and that sort of thing. He's also mentioned Dunbar and Thompson as his top deep threats. We got to talk to Quentin Dunbar a couple days ago. He said the biggest key for him was staying consistent, trying to carry over some of the stuff from his strong spring. He claims to run a 4.3 40, says there's a lot of vertical stuff going on in this offense and that his speed's going to be a huge factor there. If we had to pick out two guys right now, I mean, I guess Frankie Hammond, since he's drawn so much praise, would be one of them. But who do you think, if it's going to be somebody opposite him, do we think Dunbar or Thompson's in the lead? Have we heard anything else aside from what I've said?
I mean, I think it's probably going to be Frankie and Deontay, to me, as a starting two, and then Quentin will get a lot of playing time as, like, the slot guy. That's kind of my thing. Quinn's kind of smaller. Deontay's a bigger guy, so it's better to get Quinn in the slot.
Yeah, I'm with that. I mean, Deontay's been there the longest. You know, I don't know how well he could catch anymore.
Ever.
Have we heard anything about Deontay so far in this week that we've been talking to people? I don't think I've heard his name brought
Muschamp
up at all.
Saying that he's been doing well, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, basically Muschamp. But, I mean, every time Muschamp's brought up three, he's brought up receivers, it's been Deontay, Frankie, and Quentin Dunbar. It's pretty clear to me that Deontay will start in the beginning. If his stone hands make an appearance again, I wouldn't be surprised to see at some point this year he gets less of a role, but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, something that it was either Hammond or Dunbar said yesterday was kind of telling. He said the 4, 5, and the 6 are still wide open, speaking about the roles behind Hammond, Dunbar, and Thompson. I mean, I think he didn't mean to say it like that, but that's the question was asking him about Stephen Ali and Andre DeBose and some other guys that were in the running there. He said, yeah, the 4, 5, and 6 is still wide open. So it seems to me that those three guys that they've been talking about, that we've been talking about, are going to be the guys to start the season. And I agree with Tyler. See Stonehands make an appearance. Muschamp's not going to show the allegiance to Deontay that, you know, Urban did and keep him on the field just because he's Deontay Thompson. It's not going to happen.
The funny thing about Deontay, Brantley was talking about Frankie Hammond the other day and, you know, asked what he's seen improve from him. And he's like, he just makes plays when they need to be made. You know, he catches balls in traffic. He's like, anybody can catch a ball wide open. And I'm standing there thinking, Deontay can't.
Right. I guess the top three are kind of set. Does anybody have a favorite for the guy behind them? Anybody know, like, from interviews and stuff we've done so far, who would probably be the most likely number four?
I mean, I feel like it's got to be Andre DeBose, but...
Yeah, I think it's Andre, too.
He's
too dynamic.
Too talented, yeah.
Right.
I don't want to use the dreaded P word, but Andre DeBose has a lot of...
Potential.
You know, potential.
I thought you were
going to
say playbook.
Right.
I honestly thought you were going the direction of playbook.
Well, yeah, there's two there. You can say potential or playbook, depending upon who you're talking to. If you're talking to Muschamp, you don't want to say play or potential. You're talking to DeBose, you don't want to say playbook.
According to Andre DeBose, playbook was never a problem, though.
Yeah, that's what he says, but that's obvious that wasn't the case. Yeah.
So. I imagine Omarius Hines will see some time there, too.
Right.
Though he's also working at tight end now that they're short there. Muschamp was speaking highly of Juwan Story the other day, true freshman. Big receiver, 6'4", but, you know, he played quarterback in high school, so don't know how well he's been able to transition there yet.
Right.
Yeah, Hines has got to get on the field. He's too damn big and fast not to get the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom touched on Story briefly. That was another brief note I wanted to make, because Dunbar seemed very high on him when asked about him. Did you get a chance to see Story play last year, Tom, covering the recruiting?
I saw him once at a game that got called at halftime because of lightning. And then saw him during the Under Armour week, in the game and during practices.
Okay, what kind of impression did he make on you that in terms of being able to make this transition and potentially contributing this year? Is there anything you can add to what we've already said?
I mean, he looked pretty good during Under Armour practices. He's just a big guy, and talking to Jeff Driscoll that week, he was like, yeah, man, I love Juwan. I could just throw it up there and know he's going to grab it. You know, having a guy that's 6'4 is big, especially on a team that has so many smaller receivers.
As a true freshman, I don't see him contributing that much too early, but should Deontay Thompson have some issues, I wouldn't be surprised to see his Story get inserted later on down the line in the season. I mean, let's be honest, he's got a bona fide pregame ritual that's going to set him up for success every single time he takes the field.
Yep. Can you run us through that real quick?
Well, you know, in an interview he did, he mentioned that his pregame ritual is to take a dump and listen to Katy Perry before every single game.
I mean, how can you go wrong with that?
isn't that what we all do before games?
Right.
I don't play, so I can't speak to
it's
that.
It's a proven formula for success. All right, I guess that's a nice transition, because I wanted to get into something a little more fun here, something that we've, has kind of been a little bit of a buzz so far this week. This is Trey Burton's appearance in did an interview with I don't know if I want to call it a company called First Down and Dirty.
That's an online show hosted by Kavita Shane, or she's a UF graduate from, like, 2002 or whatever. She's a self-described Barbara Walters of sports journalism.
I didn't quite get that vibe when I watched the video.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. But actually, Greg, if you don't mind, can you go on your laptop and pull up her website real quick? Because there's a YouTube video I'd like to play, and at least if it sounds good, if it transitions well to the microphone, it'd be worth listening to.
I wish I could spell her name.
It's K-A-V-I-T-E. Kavita, and then C-H-A-N-N-E. I don't want to talk too much about this, just because I feel like all I'm going to do is just make fun of the two people involved in it. I don't necessarily like doing that.
That'd be kind of fun.
I feel kind of bad about doing that. But yeah, I mean, she was clearly not professional in her interview. She is very attractive, I will say that. She was on some Fox reality show back in like 2003. I mean, it's shouldn't be taken like seriously at any rate. And I mean, if you haven't seen it, I suggest you go on YouTube and check it out.
Right. Just search for First Down and Dirty.
And I mean, Trey Burton.
Honestly, you hear that name, as soon as you load the video, you'll be able to tell that this woman doesn't have a shred of journalistic integrity in her body. I mean, it's absolutely silly. At one point in the interview, Trey Burton gets asked, not outright, but presumably, who he would rather have sex with, Aaron Andrews, Jen Brown, and who was the third?
She didn't ask that. That was a local radio girl who I can only describe as the Snooki of Gainesville. But yeah, like I said, I don't really... That's it. I'm done making fun of this. Yeah. The only thing I will say is I don't know how this ended up happening. And I'd be curious to see at what point Trey was like, all right, this is not good. I think I would have to imagine that either is when he saw Kavita roll up in like what can only be described as like a very low cut dress. Her titties are kind of popping out, basically. And she tells him that he's very hot in the video.
Yes. Like Mark Sanchez, Tom Brady.
New hottie on the scene, folks. Watch out for Trey Burton. Right. He's hot.
I can't get over that the UAA actually let this happen.
Right.
With how strict they are with their access that this was okay.
I mean, they must have circumvented the UAA to set this up, right?
No, Kavita said that this was all like UAA approved, and the UAA said that it's all UAA approved. So, I guess they're thinking this is kind of a softball thing. I don't know how it was described to them. I can't imagine this is how they wanted it to be. I mean, Trey Burton hasn't been available for interviews since this has come out, so you've got to imagine that they're kind of keeping him away from us, as the reporter from the Palm Beach Post basically pointed out. Trey plays so many different positions that they can technically never bring him out. Like on the day of the tight ends, they're like, oh well, you know, he's gonna be available to the fullbacks. And the day of the fullbacks, like, oh well, you know, he's gonna be available to the tight ends or the receivers or whatever it may be. So they can kind of, you know, get away from that. And I think it's definitely calculated that one of the most eloquent speakers on the team has not been available to us for interviews.
You know, the poster boy of the team last year.
Right. Right. For those of you who haven't seen it or don't want to go look it up or somehow can't find it, there's a segment where they make donuts because that's like his big Twitter thing. And then he's just like doing push-ups with people on his back and a lot of just random
having
things.
Having chocolate syrup squirted in his mouth.
Yeah, right. It's not good. It's not flattering. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to get Kavita's reel up. It doesn't look like Greg's internet's working, which is unfortunate. You could see that she kind of describes herself as like asking hard-hitting questions, and she at one point does show up to like LeBron James' birthday party and ask him a question, and like she asked the guys from like LMFAO some weird questions, and everything's very awkward. Paris Hilton and Nikki Hilton are involved. Like it's a very interesting reel. I highly suggest you check it out. One thing I did want to say: are we good, Matt?
No, I'm just
okay. Sorry. Yeah, I was rubbing something together. But anyway.
He's trying to start his fire.
Yeah, I was trying to start a fire with a pin and a coin. So if you heard that, then I apologize for that. But I did want to get philosophical on you for a second. She does describe herself as doing sports parodies. Do you think that what she was doing was a parody or not? And I guess the reason I'm asking this is I feel like as a whole, we are, in general are too sarcastic as people. And so you can't tell when people are being serious or being sarcastic. And I can't, like, tell the line of whether this was a complete joke that we didn't know about or if this was at any level serious.
Wow. I mean, that's interesting.
I mean, you could claim parody, but I'll just call it unprofessional.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's not like I'm speechless. I really don't know.
You don't know if it was a parody or not. Like, I don't think it was designed to be a parody, but it's like, this is so bad, they can kind of cover it up as a parody.
Yeah. It seems like they were trying too hard, especially at the end where they were, you know, trying to make outtakes during the credits and whatnot. It just seemed like they were trying too hard to make it a legit production for it to be a parody. But at the same time, that's what you want to do with a parody. So,
it's like kind of like The Room where like they tried to make a movie and then it sucked and now it's a parody.
That's my point, I guess. One thing is though, like as you look at some of these other videos that she's done, there's one where it's supposedly an interview with Brett Favre, but it's someone like dressed up supposed to be like Brett Favre, and it's like her interviewing this fake Brett Favre. And so that was clearly a parody. Now I feel like this one was supposed to be semi-serious, but then she can kind of be like, nah, this is all just a joke, and this is a parody.
Are we sure this was really Trey Burton and not someone?
No, I mean, that's not up for debate.
All right, so we're going to wrap up the show today with our newly minted Ahmad Black Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport. Those go along with our Will Hill Bad Life Decision of the Week. No, I'm sorry. It's Awful Life Decision
of the Week. Awful Life Decision of the Week.
Very important distinction. We're going to carry on the legacy of former host Adam Barry by always ending on a bad note. So we'll start with our Ahmads, and we'll start with Tyler.
Okay, I'm going to give my Ahmad to you, Will Muschamp. I want you to keep it up because I saw 3 minutes of a practice clip on ESPN, and I loved it. And I just want to encourage you to let us all see more of that because that was a lot of fun to watch. If anyone followed ESPN's All Access on Monday, they basically followed the team all day and showed you either what they were allowed to show you or what they wanted to show you. The line's always hard to tell. But we did get to see one drill for 3 minutes, and it's basically Will Muschamp yelling at everyone in his path, except for Ronald Powell, a.k.a. Right. Powie. He seemed very, very gentle with Powie. Love Powie, but everyone else, Darren Kitchens, number 27, who's like some walk-on running back, fumbled the ball, and he told him to get out of the drill.
Hold on the ball!
You won't play!
He told Mac Brown that Mac Brown won't play because Mac Brown fumbled it at some point.
Right after the cameras.
Darren Kitchens really did a bad job. He needed to scrape and seek at. He had outside responsibility, and he apparently got sucked inside. Listen, I love that out of you, Will, and I want more of that. There's no one that's going to hate you for that. That was great. Show us more. That's my Ahmad
Black. This is a good reason to be mad that practices are closed. A lot of people are like, well, I don't want to spend all the time watching practice anyway. But it's like, this would be fun. Muschamp's crazy.
I'd like to see what these guys could do before they actually hit the field against a real team.
Right. Mostly just to see Will Muschamp, a.k.a. Ahmad Black of the week.
Right. Tom, you're Ahmad.
All right. I'm going to start us off by saying both my awards are baseball-related. I'm going through withdrawals since getting back from Oakland.
That's fair.
But my Ahmad goes to Dan Ogla, who, with a hit in his first at-bat tonight, got extended his hit streak to 33 games. And
which, by the time you're listening to this, may or may not have continued. Yeah. No. But this is where we're recording this on a Saturday night. But
still, it's still a valiant
33
effort
games
to get this
is
far.
Impressive as is.
33 games, started at 173, and now he's at 230.
Yeah, something like
pretty
that.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. Anyway, my Ahmad of the week goes to Adam Scott, who won the Bridgestone Invitational last week, World Golf Championship event. His first big win since winning the TPC Players Championship held in Ponte Vedra a long time ago. And Adam Scott, thank you. Just good job, man.
You're just a big Adam Scott fan?
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the guys that, you know, he came onto the stage and everybody said, he's the next Tiger, kind of like the next Percy Harvin here in Florida. And it never amounted to that. And finally, it seems like he's taking the next step in his career and finally reaching his potential.
Cheers to you, Adam Scott.
Golf getting a shout out on the podcast.
That's right.
All right. Well, my Ahmad Black is, it's very simple, very weak, but it's just that there are NFL games going on now and then the last couple days. With all the lockout talk, it's nice to actually see people on the field. Visual confirmation that it's truly over.
I think I was better off without the Dolphins playing on my TV.
Right. We'll get to that later. This is a good segue into the Will Hill Awful Life Decision of the Week. We'll start with Tyler.
Okay, my Will Hill Awful Life Decision of the Week is going to go to Oklahoma City basketball star Kendrick Perkins.
Who never smiles.
Who does not smile, but he does get arrested for public intoxication and disorderly conduct. He was arrested for that on Thursday night, or Friday, actually. And basically, the celebrity exhibition basketball game at his basketball camp was canceled, and then he skipped the game-ending banquet the next night, which is just, you know, just too bad. Not a good look out of you, Kendrick.
Yeah.
Such a
critical piece of that team, too. It's a real shame.
Team Sober holding it down over here.
Yeah. As a man who is part of Team Sober, I am disappointed in you, Kendrick Perkins.
Right. It's a shame. We'll move over to Tom. What's yours?
All right, mine, again, baseball-related, goes to Cubs pitcher Carlos Zambrano, who, after he was ejected from the game Friday night for throwing at Dan Ogla and Chipper Jones, cleared out his locker and pretty much just walked out on his team and then was suspended 30 days without pay today by the Cubs. I mean, you don't quit on your team. You don't walk out like that, especially, you know, what are they at, 100 games in the season at this point?
About 60 below 500.
Yeah, but
Still, definitely not a great move to be
making. You're getting paid millions to play a game. You don't walk out.
Right. Probably not the best move. Matt, what's yours?
Yeah, my Will this week goes to Steve Williams.
Another
surprise.
Golf one?
Yes, a golf reference again. He is, if you do not know, the seemingly irrelevant caddy who came to national prominence about 2 weeks ago for his scuffle with Tiger Woods. He's Tiger Woods' ex-caddy, and now he's the caddy for Adam Scott. But his awful life decision of the week is telling the media and the world that he is responsible solely for Adam Scott winning the Bridgestone Invitational and taking that much of a role in the whole ordeal. It's just mind-boggling to me how he can go from unknown to media darling to hated by everyone in a matter of 2 weeks.
Right. Some wrestling stuff right there.
Could we give one to ESPN for actually making Steve Williams a story to begin with?
Has he backed off that claim a little bit that it was
He did back off a little bit, but to even say it initially is just absolutely preposterous. I mean, the caddy situation is silly. They get paid 10% to carry around a bag for 4 days. I mean, jeez.
I think we all know the real reason Tiger is losing now. It's the lack of Perkins waitresses in his life.
Right, and lack of Steve Williams and lack of that. It's real tough for Tiger out there.
I'm not touching any of that.
All right, final award of the week, my Will Hill bad, awful life decision. I got to stop saying bad. Awful is very key. It's for the Dolphins quarterbacks, just because they just suck. Like, I don't know if I have to go into it that much. I think it's pretty obvious that Chad Henne and Matt Moore are terrible.
Matt Moore has covered it.
I think you should have given it to the Miami Dolphins front office for not pursuing anything in free agency and thinking that Matt Moore might be an option.
He got beat out at quarterback on the worst team in football last year. And he's going to be your answer if Chad Henne's not?
I'll give the front office a little credit for at least trying to get Kyle Orton as much as they tried to get Kyle Orton.
Well, I give them a lot of credit for trying to get Andrew Luck.
It's another theory. All right. Well, with that, I guess we'll wrap it up for this week. I think we're going to have weekly shows going forward, probably until the start of the season. And then I don't know about you guys, but I'll be pushing for two. Back in the podcast's prime, we would do a Monday show to kind of recap the game. And then Friday show is a little bit of a preview. So we'll see if we can get back into that. I don't know what our schedule is going to look like. And got a couple editors in the room, so it could be busy. But we'll do our
best. We'll save that for some closed-door discussions.
Yeah, we'll do our best to get that to you. Until then, follow us on Twitter, at Alligator Sports. You guys can shout out all your handles.
I'm good.
Oh, really?
We did it last week.
No, right, mine. Okay, sorry. We do it every week. Mine is at Tyler_Jet, because some douchebag has Tyler _Jet, and so I'm _Jet.
Watt Mats, WATTMATTS.
Tomas_Verde, TOMAS_VERDE.
Right, and I'm just going to keep you guys in suspense, but another way to keep up with us is to check on Facebook. We have an Alligator Sports podcast page. That's a good place to look. Always subscribe on iTunes, and of course, pick up the Alligator paper. It's a new student edition coming out next week.
Monday the 15th.
So yeah, keep an eye out for that. And until then, thanks for listening.